Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Welcome to our deep dive all about systems thinking. We got this presentation from you called Two Major Misconceptions of Systems Thinking Exposed, and it's by Joseph Kassa.
Oh, yeah.
And Bruce Lerner. And they've got, gosh, over 65 years of experience between the two of them in this field. So this is kind of a must listen. And, you know, Kassa especially, he's kind of known as like a systems thinking rebel. So we're definitely in for some myth busting today. Get ready to challenge some assumptions, maybe even shift your perspective a bit.
You know, what really struck me about this presentation was how Kassa and Lerner really just dive right in and start dismantling this very common belief that reductionism doesn't work.
Yeah, we've all heard it, right? Like reductionism, you know, breaking things down into the simplest parts, that's old news.
Yeah.
And systems thinking is the only way to go for complex problems.
Right.
Kassa and Lerner, they hit the brakes on that idea pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, their argument is that this misconception, it comes from misunderstanding what it means to analyze something in isolation. And sure, systems thinking emphasizes interconnectedness, but that doesn't mean reductionism is useless. Mm-hmm. It's actually really valuable for understanding individual components, you know, and how they affect the whole system in isolation.
I see where they're going with this.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're troubleshooting a problem with your computer, you might start by isolating different components, like the RAM or the hard drive, to see if they're working right.
Yeah. Exactly. And I love how they bring in the Wright brothers. They remind us that they used the lift equation, which is a classic example of a reductionist tool, to figure out how much lift a wing would produce, right? And that was a vital piece of the puzzle in building, well, you know, a flying machine. And talk about a complex system.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm completely reframing how I'm thinking about reductionism now. It's not about ignoring the interconnectedness. It's just using a focused approach to understand those pieces better. But how do we know when to zoom in and when to zoom out? Because, I mean, you don't want to miss the forest for the trees, right?
Right. Well, that's where Kassa and Lerner's insight about choosing the right tool comes in. They suggest asking yourself this simple question. Am I trying to understand how something works?
Okay.
Or how it interacts with its environment? Hmm. If you're focused on the inner workings, like how an engine functions, then the reductionist approach might be more helpful.
Right.
But if you're trying to understand how that engine impacts traffic flow in a city,
okay,
then you need the systems thinking approach.
So it's not about saying one's better than the other.
Right.
It's just about knowing their strengths and weaknesses and applying them strategically. It's like having different lenses to examine a problem.
I love that.
Yeah.
It makes me think of all the times I've tried to solve a problem and only looked at the big picture and it felt overwhelming, you know? Maybe if I had used some reductionism and broke it down into smaller pieces, I could have made more progress.
That's such a good point. It really highlights how important it is to have both of those tools in our toolkit. Mm. I'm already starting to see how this could change how I approach things.
Yeah.
So we've tackled that first misconception about reductionism.
Right.
You ready to dive into that second myth that Kassa and Lerner debunk?
Oh, absolutely. And this one is all about open and closed systems.
Yeah, that's always been a bit tricky for me, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the misconception they're talking about here?
The misconception is that open and closed systems are totally different types of systems.
Yeah, like they belong in separate categories.
Exactly. But Kassa and Lerner, they propose a really fascinating shift in how we think about this. They argue that open and closed aren't different types of systems at all. They're just different ways of looking at the same system.
Wait, so it's all about perspective?
You got it. It all boils down to where you choose to draw the boundary. For example,
okay,
think of a human.
Okay.
From a purely biological perspective, we're closed systems. We have all these specific mechanisms that keep us going. But if you zoom out and think about us from a social perspective, then we're clearly open systems, constantly interacting with our environment, family, community, the whole nine yards.
So it's not like a system is open or closed. Mm-hmm. It just depends on how we define the boundary.
Exactly. And the problem itself will tell you where that boundary should be.
So it's like using different maps depending on if you're navigating a city or a whole country.
That's the perfect analogy.
Right. You wouldn't use a city map to plan a cross-country road trip, would you?
No, you wouldn't. But why bother with this boundary shifting? Wouldn't it be easier to just stick with one view?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because if we do that, if we limit ourselves to just one perspective, we risk missing crucial information. And that's where those blind spots come in.
You're right. If we're stuck in one view, we might miss important connections and nuances.
Yeah, exactly. For example, let's say we have a bus.
Right.
Now, if you want to understand how the engine works, you would look at it as a closed system, right? You'd focus on all the internal parts.
Like a mechanic would.
Exactly. But if you're analyzing how that bus impacts the traffic flow in a whole city, then you need to see it as an open system, interacting with other vehicles, traffic lights, pedestrians, the whole network.
So to solve a problem well, we need to be able to shift our view and pick the best one.
Yes.
It's not about saying it IS open or closed. Mm. It's about using the lens that shows us the whole picture.
You nailed it. And this is really important because this is how we avoid those blind spots.
Yeah. I'm starting to see how this is much more flexible.
Yeah.
Like having a superpower to shift your focus and see things from multiple angles.
It is. It gives us so many more options to understand and address challenges.
This is already making me rethink how I approach problems. So we've debunked those two big misconceptions about systems thinking. What's next?
Well, now we can look at what Kasser and Lerner call the systems approach. And this is where we combine the best of both worlds. It's understanding that reductionism and systems thinking aren't enemies. They work together.
Oh, this is getting good. Let's unpack this systems approach and see how it can help us with the complexity of, well, you know, the world around us. But first, a quick word from our sponsors.
We'll be back soon to continue our deep dive into the world of systems thinking. Welcome back to our deep dive into systems thinking. I don't know about you, but I'm already feeling like I've learned a lot from just that first part.
Yeah, it's amazing how much just debunking those misconceptions can open up your thinking.
Absolutely. So before the break, we were getting into what Kasser and Lerner called the systems approach, this idea of using both reductionism and systems thinking together. Not as opposites, but as, you know, tools that work together. Right. It's like having a toolbox full of different tools, and each one is designed for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't use a hammer to tighten a screw, would you?
No. I'd probably just make things worse.
Right. And it's the same with solving problems. Sometimes you need that reductionist approach to break things down and understand each part.
Mm-hmm.
And other times you need that systems thinking approach to see the big picture and how it all connects.
Right.
The key is knowing which one to use.
I see what you mean. It's all about being flexible and adaptable.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about sticking to one method. It's about being able to shift your perspective and use the tool that works best in that moment.
Okay, but how do we actually know which tool to use? I mean, won't we just get stuck trying to figure out the approach instead of actually solving the problem?
That's a good point. And Kasser and Lerner talk about that. They suggest a step-by-step process where you always look at both the internal and external sides of things to make sure you're not missing anything.
So it's like looking at the problem with two different lenses.
Yes. A wide angle and a zoom lens.
Mm-hmm.
You need both to get the whole picture. Imagine you're trying to figure out why there are always delays on a particular bus route.
Okay, so our problem is bus delays. How would this system's approach help us with that?
Well, first, you got to define what your system is. Like, what are all the pieces involved? So you've got the bus itself, the driver, the passengers, the route, the traffic lights, other cars, maybe even pedestrians, and the weather.
Wow, that's a lot. It's easy to see how someone might get overwhelmed and just blame the driver or the traffic.
Right. And that's where the systems approach is so helpful. It makes you look at all those different elements and how they're connected. You might even find that the delays aren't just caused by the driver or even just the amount of traffic.
Maybe there's a traffic light that's timed wrong and it's causing a bottleneck.
Exactly. Or maybe there's just too many buses on that route at rush hour.
Right, right.
The point is, by considering the whole system, you're more likely to get to the root cause of the problem.
Okay, I get it. And then once you understand that, then you can come up with a better solution.
Mm.
Like, instead of just adding more buses, which might actually make the delays worse,
right?
You could adjust the traffic light timing.
Exactly.
Or change the bus schedule, or maybe even make a dedicated bus lane.
Right. That's what's so cool about the systems approach. It helps you see beyond the easy solutions and really address those deeper issues.
I'm seeing the power of this approach. It's about being proactive, not reactive.
Yeah.
Tackling the cause, not the symptom.
Exactly. But what about situations where it's tough to even define the boundaries of a system? How do you know where to draw the line?
That's a good point.
That's where the idea of iteration comes in. You don't need to figure everything out perfectly right away. Start small, focus on the main things, and then expand as you learn more. It's a process of, you know, learning as you go.
So you're saying start with a sketch and add details later.
Exactly. Plus, that also stops us from feeling overwhelmed.
Right, right.
We can just break down the problem into smaller steps.
It's like that saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
I love that. That sums it up perfectly.
You know, I'm realizing how much this applies to all kinds of things, even personal stuff. Like, if I'm having an issue with a coworker, instead of just focusing on our own points of view, I could try to see the bigger picture, like the team dynamics, the company structure, the overall goals, you know.
That's a perfect example. By looking at the broader context, you might find deeper reasons for the conflict.
Yeah.
Like maybe there's poor communication or conflicting priorities or even just different work styles.
It's like you're seeing the whole tapestry instead of just one thread.
Right.
And then by understanding those bigger patterns, I could find a solution that actually gets to the root of the conflict.
Exactly. And that's what makes this so powerful. It lets us go beyond simple either thinking and deal with the real complexity.
It's about seeing how everything is connected, how our actions affect things, and how we can make better decisions.
That's such a good point. It's about moving from a me view to an us view.
I really like that.
Mm.
This feels like a much more powerful way to live.
It is. And it's not even just about problems. It can help us make things more resilient and sustainable, whether that's our personal lives, our companies, or even, you know, society as a whole.
This is really making me rethink everything. And we've only just scratched the surface. I can't wait to hear about more examples of how to use this systems approach, how we can really start using it in our daily lives.
Me too. I think Kasser and Lerner have some great examples that can really bring this to life for us.
Welcome back to our deep dive. And wow, I feel like we've been on quite a journey already.
Yeah, we've covered so much. I'm really excited to see how we can actually use all of this.
Me too. I bet our listeners are wondering the same thing, you know, like, how can they use these ideas to actually make a difference?
Oh, definitely. And you know what? Kasser and Lerner have some really good examples that show us exactly that.
Okay. One that I thought was really interesting was about healthcare.
Hmm.
Like, imagine a hospital with super long wait times in the ER.
Okay.
A lot of people just say, hire more doctors, hire more nurses.
Right, because that seems logical at first. More staff, more patients, right.
Yeah, but a systems thinker would actually take a step back and look at the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the wait times, but like the intake process, how many beds are available, how well the departments work together, even stuff like how fast the ambulances are.
So instead of just trying to fix the wait times, they look for problems in the whole process.
Exactly. And once they find those problems, they can come up with much better solutions.
Mm.
Like maybe they need to speed up how they decide who needs help first.
Mm-hmm.
Or improve communication between departments.
Right, so things move faster.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe even work with clinics in the area to send people who don't have emergencies somewhere else so the ER can focus on the really urgent stuff.
Wow, that's really interesting. It makes you realize that the obvious solution isn't always the right one. Right. It's like those magic eye pictures, you know? You have to kind of relax your eyes and look beyond the surface to see what's really there.
I love that analogy. Mm. And now I'm starting to see those hidden images everywhere. It's like a whole new way of looking at things.
That's what's so cool about systems thinking. It's not just about fixing things. It's about understanding how connected everything is.
Right.
And realizing that what we do affects everything else.
It's like shifting from that straight line cause and effect thinking to a more like web-like understanding.
Exactly. And that can change everything from little arguments to huge world problems.
Speaking of world problems, Kasser and Lerner talk about climate change.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example of something we can't fix by just looking at one piece of it.
Absolutely. You can't just focus on, say, reducing emissions without thinking about the economy and society that cause those emissions.
Right.
So a systems approach would mean looking at renewable energy. Better ways to travel, how we consume things, even things like poverty and inequality, because those things can make environmental problems worse.
It's about seeing the whole picture, not just the little parts.
Right. It's about working with nature, not trying to control it.
It's almost like we need to be more compassionate, not just with people, but with the whole planet.
I love that. You're right. There's an ethical side to systems thinking, too.
Mm.
It's not just about finding the easiest answer. It's about finding the fairest answer.
I'm seeing a pattern here. It seems like systems thinking is about being more aware, more understanding, more compassionate.
Yeah, it's about getting rid of simple solutions. embracing the complexity
yeah.
and finding ways to make the world a better place for everyone.
This has been such a great conversation.
I agree.
I feel like I have so many new ways to look at the world now.
Me too. And I hope everyone listening is feeling inspired to try these ideas out in their own lives.
So before we go, what's the one thing you want our listeners to remember?
I think the most important thing is to just remember that this systems lens exists.
Okay.
So when you have a problem, don't just react. Stop, take a breath, and ask yourself, what are all the pieces? How do they fit together? What are the deeper patterns?
It's like being curious and wanting to see the whole picture, not just the little part right in front of you.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to question things. The obvious solution might not be the right one. Be open to different ideas, think about the consequences, and be ready to change your approach as you learn.
It's about realizing that we don't know everything and being willing to learn from others.
Yes. And if you want to learn more, Kasser and Lerner have a great book called The Systems Thinker's Toolbox.
Oh, yeah.
It's got tons of practical stuff to help you solve problems and think like a systems thinker.
Perfect. We'll definitely share that in the show notes. Well, I think that's it for our deep dive.
Yeah, it's been great.
It really has. But we always like to leave our listeners with something to think about. So think about the systems you're a part of. Your work, your community, your family, even your own body. How can you use these ideas to understand those systems better and make them better? That's something to really explore, and we hope you'll keep learning about this amazing world of systems thinking.
Keep those systems thinking gears turning.
Thank you for joining us. Until next time, keep learning and keep growing.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems. Take care.